80s and 90s. Pentagon spokesman Captain Jeff Davis said the strikes had helped disrupt al-Qaeda's ability to plot and direct external attacks targeting the US and our interests worldwide.
And it's been announced Canada's Prime Minister and the U.S. President will meet in Washington on Monday. This comes in the wake of Justin Trudeau's strong rebuke of Donald Trump's executive order on immigration, with Trudeau having offered to welcome any refugees turned away by the U.S. Mary McCarthy has more.
The White House has issued a statement saying that President Trump is looking forward to a constructive conversation on strengthening relations with Canada. And Justin Trudeau's office has said that it wants to discuss how the two nations can work hard for middle-class Canadians and Americans together. It will be the first time the two leaders meet face-to-face, and the meeting comes against a backdrop of tension, with the Canadian Prime Minister having expressed strong opposition to Trump's executive order restricting immigration from several Muslim nations.
From Bureaus Worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you, Rebecca Foster. It is exactly 3 minutes past the hour. It's Thursday, the 9th of February 2016. The last time we started the programme at 8 p.m. GMT, as we're moving to 7 p.m. next week. Thought I'd note that. Hope you've had a good day. Let's get on with the programme.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on DavidIke.com. It's the Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with DavidIke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Now, many years ago on the radio, I used to do something every now and then. I used to feature a kind of a Cliff Notes show, a beginner's guide to. And prompted by a few emails I've had in the last few days, in the first hour tonight, we're going to have a beginner's guide to the House of Rothschild. Okay, so Dean Henderson, fantastic guy, brilliant author and blogger and broadcaster. Dean joins me to talk about the history of the Rothschild family, an introduction to the House of Rothschild, if you like putting it like that. I'm very excited about this. Dean is the author of many books, including Big Oil and Their Bankers. Top man. And in the second hour, the broadcaster and journalist Scott Creighton will join me for the first time. I think this week, Scott's article on the Amnesty International claims of 13,000 people being executed in Syria. Scott's dissection of that article, for me, is the article of the week. Now, we don't have a feature like that here on this programme, but if we did have an article of the week, we would be sending the gong to Scott Creighton. Fantastic article. WillieLoman.wordpress.com is where you'll find Scott Creighton. So that's in the second hour, and more besides as well. Good old stuff there. Yeah, so tweet at Richie Allen Show, email Richie at richieallen.co.uk. Couldn't be simpler. At Richie Allen Show to Twitter, Richie at richieallen.co.uk. This programme broadcasting live on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, alternatecurrentradio.com. We're on the TuneIn app, and of course the programme is produced in association with davidike.com. Do bookmark, yes, bookmark davidike.com/Headlines. Before we go any further, I want to say a big hello to a friend of mine, Tanya Bork. Now, you might remember Tanya coming on the programme nearly 2 years ago to talk about aerotoxic syndrome. Tanya is a former flight attendant. She came on with her friend, another great woman called Dee Passon. Well, Tanya told me today that she's expecting her third child this coming summer. So massive congratulations from the Richie Allen Show to our friend and supporter, Tanya Bork, and her partner, and her other two children, of course, on that fabulous news. It's going to be a great summer, Tanya. And thanks again for all your help with the programme. Great stuff. Before we talk a little bit about Jeff Sessions, don't groan. I'll try and make it as brief as I possibly can, dear listener. Before we talk about Jeff Sessions, there was a story in the Mirror today sent to me by my friend Anne Selly. Good evening, Anne. And she tweeted a story that had been tweeted by Kevin Maguire. I won't say much about Kevin Maguire. But anyway, the headline in the Mirror today, Cambridge Tory student sets fire to £20 note in front of freezing homeless person in cruel stunt. Tory student at Cambridge sets fire to £20 note in front of freezing homeless person in cruel stunt. A shocked passerby caught the incident on camera as the Tory toff, wearing bow tie and tails, set the money on fire. So the Mirror goes on to talk about this. They named a guy, and the guy's name has gone viral. I'm not sure that was the best thing in the world to do, to be honest. Not that I have any great sympathy with him, but his name is Ronald Coyne. I know. Well, Richie, if you're a bit worried about him being named, why are you naming him? His name is out there, right? His name is out there. Cambridge Students' Union and Cambridge have disowned the guy. They've said it's disgraceful. I found it interesting today. First of all, it's a terrible thing to do. How you could taunt somebody who's down on their luck and set fire to money and laugh at them, I have no idea. The story's been tweeted thousands and thousands of times. And interestingly enough, people are calling on social media for young Mr. Coyne to be murdered. Now, hang on a second. Just hang on a second there now. Murdered. Murdered. Is that an appropriate punishment for taunting and mocking somebody who's homeless and setting fire to money? Murder him. And the people expressed an outrage today, and this is an old chestnut, this. Where's the outrage at the destruction of the NHS, the privatisation? Where's the outrage at us selling arms to Saudi Arabia to be used to commit genocide in Yemen? Where's the outrage about that? A guy burns a £20 note. He should be properly given a proper dressing down by the university, by his parents, and by his friends. More importantly, I would hope he has friends who wouldn't be happy about that and would pull him back into line. Maybe he might go and do something for the homeless now. But to be talking about killing him, where's all the outrage for stuff that really matters? And by the way, I'm not unsympathetic to the plight of the homeless. We make it our business to do as much as we can for the homeless. You know, we're all only a couple of missed paychecks away from the streets. Let's be honest about it. That's what the system has done to us, right? And as for people filming everybody and everything and putting it on social media and selling it to the papers, any thoughts on that, anybody, before we start calling for a guy to be murdered? Is this a good thing, people running around filming one another? What about that heavy lady, that big lady who was being dragged by a pickup truck and she was in a wheelbarrow or she was in a motorised wheelchair and people filming it and laughing about it on Twitter? What have we become? The kid who burnt the note is a little bastard, right? But I don't know why we're expressing so much shock about it. That's what these little toffs do. They've done it forever. He'll most likely end up, as I said on Twitter today, in the House of Commons. That's the way it goes. So you heard on the news there, Rebecca Foster said Donald Trump has signed three executive orders to deal with public safety, including, controversially, unsurprisingly, handing more authority to the police. As the formal ceremony to appoint Jeff Sessions, At the formal ceremony to appoint Jeff Sessions as Attorney General, Trump outlined the new mandate that Sessions would have, including tackling crime, drug cartels and terrorism. Rising crime and all of that, said Trump. It's a shame what's happening to our great law enforcement officers. That's going to stop today, said Trump, and pointed to the fact that in 2016, 135 police officers were killed in the US. 135. What Trump didn't mention was that nearly 1,000 people were killed by the police last year. And we're only into February, and the police have already killed 130 people in the United States. Do you want to hear what Trump had to say? You don't? Well, you're going to hear him anyway. This is Trump talking about, well, pretty much what I just said.
I'm signing three executive actions today designed to restore safety in America. These executive actions continue to deliver on my campaign promises. First, I'm directing Department of Justice and Homeland Security to undertake all necessary and lawful action to break the back of the criminal cartels that have spread across our nation and are destroying the blood of our youth. and other people, many other people. Secondly, I'm directing Department of Justice to form a task force on reducing violent crime in America. And thirdly, I'm directing the Department of Justice to implement a plan to stop crime and crimes of violence against law enforcement officers.
Yeah, but forget about the crimes committed against ordinary people by police officers. Now, Jeff Sessions had this to say a short time ago. He said the U.S. must bring an end to illegal immigration as he was sworn in. Do you want to hear Sessions? I think we can hear a wee bit of Sessions.
We have a crime problem. I wish the rise that we're seeing in crime in America today were some sort of aberration or a blip. My best judgment, having been involved in criminal law enforcement for many years, is that this is a dangerous, permanent trend that places the health and safety of the American people at risk. We will deploy the talents and abilities of the Department of Justice in the most effective way possible to confront this rise in crime and to protect the people of our country.
This guy is some beauty. I won't subject you to too much more of that. He's a proper beauty, is Jeff Sessions. Won't say too much more about him. It's been said already in the last few days, not just here but everywhere else. Moving along swiftly, 13 minutes past the hour. There is a rising problem for the police in the United States. People are waking up, aren't they? They're waking up to what's really going on. So fake news, fake news, fake news. All this week, Channel 4 Television running a series of programmes on fake news. There is a parliamentary inquiry into fake news led by the MP Damien Collins, who has, as of yet, hasn't had the courtesy to respond to my very polite and fairly written email a few days ago. Fake news, right? Jeremy Corbyn was on the BBC today talking about his future. He was also talking about him imposing the whip on MPs at the Brexit vote and having to form a new cabinet, shadow cabinet that is. But he also took time to Jeremy to accuse the BBC of putting forth fake news.
In your own personal circumstance, I'm aware of the issue of fake news at the moment.
There's a lot of it about.
Well, there's a story going about that you've set a date for when you're going to quit as Labour leader.
That's in the imadeitupyesterday.com.
Is there absolutely no truth in that?
Absolute nonsense.
So your future as Labour leader is absolutely intact. You've not considered for a moment whether
Look,
you as leader are damaging the party's
chance.
I'm really
surprised the BBC is reporting fake news. Well, there is no news.
What I'd like, but what we're just trying to do is give you the opportunity to say it.
I was elected leader of this party. I'm very proud to lead this party. We will go through this process, demanding from the government social justice in Britain, setting out our economic plans for an investment-led economy, opposing this government on the crisis in social care and the health service, demanding real action on the housing crisis taking place all over this country. That is our agenda, that is what we're united on, and that is what I'm doing.
Yeah, he's got all the charisma of a wet blanket, sadly. One of the things I predicted, and a lot of my predictions don't come true, is that he won't see out this year and that it won't really matter anyway. Even if he's genuine or not, I had a good debate with Professor Alex Scott-Samuel of Liverpool University the other day, big fan of Corbyn, and I put my points across. I don't see him being there by the end of the year. And a lot of really good people who have supported him will feel that that will be a tragedy. It won't be. Wouldn't make a blind bit of difference if Corbyn was elected tomorrow. If they won the election tomorrow, it wouldn't make a blind bit of difference. CNN News are running a story today. There are no depths, I don't believe. Now, I know, again, this is a kind of a drum that we've banged many times. There are no depths to which the mainstream media won't sink. They are saying, our CNN, that a man who has been very critical and outspoken about the Russian government has been poisoned. CNN contending, a man very critical and outspoken of the Russian government has been poisoned. You might not believe your ears. It's important when listening to these stories to listen very carefully to the language used.
In a hospital in Moscow, an outspoken critic of the Kremlin fights for his life. Vladimir Karamurza's wife, Yevgenia, says her husband fell sick with sudden and mysterious organ failure last week.
What is your husband's official diagnosis right now?
An acute intoxication by an unidentified substance.
What do you think that means?
That's poisoning.
CNN cannot independently confirm this claim,
right.
But powerful supporters in Washington are speaking out, because this is the second time in just 2 years Karamurza has suddenly gotten sick.
Powerful people in Washington are speaking out. CNN cannot independently verify the claim. In other words, his wife said he was poisoned, but CNN couldn't even get confirmation from the hospital that indeed he was poisoned. What a crock of shit this is. And then CNN goes on to say powerful figures in Washington, well, they believe it, so it must be true. You won't guess, or you will guess, who is one of those powerful figures in Washington, D.C.? It's only John McCain.
Sick.
Many suspected he was poisoned to intimidate him or worse. That's why last week's news signaled another shadowy strike against a brilliant voice who has defied the tyranny of Putin's Russia.
Pure nonsense, says a Kremlin spokesman, denying any links between the government and Karamurza's illness.
There is no story here. There is no story here. May God have mercy on my soul. I've been a journalist for nearly 20 years. There is no story here whatsoever. They admit they have no evidence. You know, I was thinking there must be hundreds of thousands, maybe hundreds anyway, of businessmen and politicians and journalists who hate Vladimir Putin, and many of them might have very good reason to despise the oligarch. It's the same in any country, but CNN couldn't wait to jump in there with 2 feet. Because, you see, we must demonize Russia as much as we can. We've banned their athletes from international competition. We've made unsubstantiated claims of war crimes committed by Russia in Syria. We've lied about Russia creating trouble in eastern Ukraine. We will keep on lying and lying and lying and lying until you get it through your thick skulls that we need to take some sort of military action against Russia. It's as simple as that, isn't it? You have to laugh, you see, sometimes, because if you don't laugh, you'll go mad. 19 minutes past the hour. It is Thursday, February 9th, 2016. My name is Richie Allen. This is the Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with DavidIke.com. Two terrific guests, I think. Dean Henderson, last on the programme, late last spring, been a long time since Dean joined us. And Scott Creighton joins us for the very first time. He's a top man. Looking forward to you meeting him in the second hour. For now, though, I think it's time to pause and have a wee break. Back in a minute.
Do not risk putting another pound in your bank account until you've heard this message. It's Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Death of Money. But today I'm urging you to claim a free copy of my brand new book, The Road to Ruin. Visit theroadtoruin.co.uk for full details now. Inside, I uncover the financial elite's secret ICE-9 plan to take full control of your hard-earned cash. To see how, visit theroadtoruin.co.uk right away. It's not too late to prepare. Claim your free copy at theroadtoruin.co.uk today.
Looking to arrange a mortgage? Confused by all the deals available? Let Manchester Mortgages do the work for you. Take advantage of our free mortgage review offer throughout February and March and see if we can save you money. We are whole of market brokers with access to hundreds of mortgage schemes across the UK. Call us on 0161 706 0242 or go to manchestermortgages.co.uk. Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage. Manchester Mortgages are a trading style of mortgages for you, North West Limited, who are authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
All eyes on Manchester, Saturday, March 4th, 2017. The Awakening at Bowler's Exhibition Centre, Manchester. Join the stars of the Ancient Aliens TV series and the leading figures in the field of ufology and ancient alien theories. Eric Von Daniken, author of the hit book Chariots of the Gods, and Emmy Award winner Linda Moulton Howe. Get tickets now at www.awakeningufo.com.
Right, welcome back. It's exactly 22 minutes past the hour. It's time to get our first guest on the programme. Dean Henderson is with me after this from the terrific Take That. Back in two.
You can dance if you like. You can sing every line of every song. No, you don't have to steal the show. It was your show all along as the orchestra played. Take the seats, there's no room left in this house. It's only you and me, and if life is your stay, I'll be watching.
Take That, Hold Up a Light on the Richie Allen Show. It's exactly 25 minutes past the hour. You know, we've spent so much time in recent weeks talking even about the Rothschild family, the Rothschild banking family, the House of Rothschild. And a number of people listening to this programme sent me emails asking me would we focus or do a segment where we had an introduction, almost like an introduction to the Rothschild family, to make it easier to understand who these people are and where they came from. Now, I always send them a couple of books, recommendations, where they can have a look, including a book by our first guest this evening, who was with us last, way back at the end of last spring, early last summer. Always brilliant to have him on the programme. He is the author of several excellent books, including Big Oil and Their Bankers in the Persian Gulf, Four Horsemen, Eight Families and Their Global Intelligence, Narcotics and Terror Network. You can read him every single day on his blog, which is hendersonlefthook.wordpress.com. Let's welcome back to the programme our friend Dean Henderson. Dean, welcome back. How are you?
Hey, good, Richie. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on. And when I was thinking about this, really, there are only one or two people I could call on to come on and talk in a way that people will understand it and give a kind of an introduction to the Rothschild family to help people understand when they get mentioned in interviews about finance or interviews about wars and what have you, who these people really are. You're the man, Dean, and thanks for coming back on. So if we, I mean, I remember being at university, lectures usually lasted 35 minutes. We've got about 35 minutes now, my friend. How would you go about explaining to people who the Rothschilds are and why they're so important to current events?
Well, you know, it's just, there's an old saying, Richie, you know, money begets money. And it's very true, especially when you have these old families who've been around, you know, really for centuries now, accumulating money, you know. And originally the Rothschilds combined with the House of Orange, the Dutch, you know, House of Orange, to found the Bank Amsterdam in the early 1600s as the world's first central bank. So that's what, 500 years we're looking at. And, you know, basically they, the Prince William of the House of Orange married into the English House of Windsor that currently runs Great Britain. And the Orange Order Brotherhood sprang up in Ireland, the Protestant movement that was part of the whole, you know, was being financed by the House of Orange, in fact. But the old lady at Threadneedle Street, also known as the Bank of England, you know, that's pretty much a wholesale subsidiary of the Rothschilds, as is the Federal Reserve now. And what they did is they married into the, they were servants in the House of Hesse, the German House of Hesse. And at that time, it was the royal families that really had the money. I mean, they still do have the money, but now they're joined by these certain Ashkenazi Zionist Jews, the Rothschilds at the head of them, who intermarried with those royalty. And so they worked in the House of Hesse, and they basically, you know, a lot of people think they stole money from that the German royalty, and that's how they got their money to start with. The kind of seed money. They were known as the Bowers, actually, and changed their names to the Rothschilds, as these families often do and have done many times since. It's hard in the United States to track down all the things the Rothschilds own because they change their names so often when it comes to titles of land and things like this, and they've become just masters of doing this. But, you know, they were around to finance pretty much every war since. They started rumors that Napoleon was going to win that war, and then they financed Cornwall on the other side, and that they made a killing off of that, and that really launched their fortune. So, you know, they had, you know, millions, maybe $1 billion, 300, 400 years ago. Some people say they now have over 100 trillion, and I haven't been able to verify that. I don't know who could, really. It's just nowadays with the offshore banking, the secrecy, you can find out, you know, Quantum Envy is definitely one of their big vehicles where they have a lot of assets, this offshore trust. The Queen of England is also involved with it. George Soros is involved with it. But just phenomenal wealth. And then, you know, in my book, Big Oil and Their Bankers in the Persian Gulf, and also my book, The Federal Reserve Cartel, which is chapter 19 of that Big Oil book, I talk about there's eight families that literally own 52% of the New York Federal Reserve. And the Rothschilds are the main and the biggest player. And I often kind of joke that, you know, yeah, people think, oh, you're exaggerating. And I kind of think, yeah, actually, I am exaggerating, because really now they've intermarried the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, the Goldman Sachs, the Kuhnlobes,
the Warburgs,
yeah, the Lazards, and to the point where they are one big family. So actually, I am exaggerating that there's eight families even. But this is where we sit, and it's almost every you know, central bank in the world is owned by the same cartel headed by the Rothschilds. They also had global Freemasonry, you know, and the Illuminati and all these secret societies, which are instrumental in sort of the psyops end of things and keeping control spiritually over people. And they're, of course, behind Israel. This is well-known fact that the Rothschilds were sort of, you know, the fathers of Israel, with the Balfour Declaration, 1917. And so the Mossad pretty much functions as a private intelligence organization for the Rothschild family, would be a better way to describe the Mossad. And so the key was, I think, intermarrying with the royals cementing all these crowns, which are just absurd. You know, the whole idea that we have kings and queens in this day and age to me is just absurd.
Absurd, yeah.
Yeah. So, but they did that, and that was just a huge combination. There are those who believe they're behind the Jesuits. I actually think that that's propaganda because the Jesuits are the most progressive part of the Catholic Church, the only part that never maybe got sold out to the Rothschilds. They're in and out of the Catholic Church. Currently, I think they're on the outs. And the Catholic Church, ironically, may be one of the only entities powerful enough to sort of expose these people. They did, the current Pope did arrest the Vatican Bank chairman as soon as he was put into the seat, but people wonder if they'll kill him. They already tried once in Brazil, actually. So they're just so powerful, and they're behind the scenes, and...
Can I just jump in? Can I just jump in there?
Fiction.
This is brilliant stuff, Dean. Let me just jump in there. You've written, as well as the books, you've written some brilliant articles on them. And I want to go back in time because it sounds almost like a Corleone family, even though that's fictional, but you could say the Lucchese family or the Genovese family, the way they consolidated who they were by incorporating into their family other wealthy people and the royal families. I want to go back to that. But am I right in saying that a couple of years ago, certain people, certain journalists, you might have been one of them, tried to use a Freedom of Information request to find out what sort of shareholdings the Rothschild had in the big banks, Chase Manhattan, and some of these other big banks in New York. Is that right? And that freedom, that information was not given.
Yeah, that's right. I was actually...
It was you, right?
You might have been remembering, Richie, for my master's thesis. And I was, I sent them to the Comptroller of Currency, the Department of Treasury, the Bureau of Printing and Engraving, all these different agencies that regulate banking. And yeah, it was classified as a Freedom of Information Act request, which I didn't request it that way. And then they said, pretty much, this information is denied. And so you have to find out the bank holding companies. Is the key. But there's enough, things that have gotten through that we know what we know. And we know, for example, that the Rothschilds pretty much run the Bank of America and own it lock, stock, and barrel. We know that they are in combination with the Rockefellers, the Stillmans, and others owning Chase Manhattan. We know they're involved with Citigroup. We know their Bankers Trust they're involved with, which is now part of Deutsche Bank. The big German bank, which is a Warburg bank mainly. So it really, we have to focus on this top echelon, of families, and we have to track this stuff down, and then we have to deal with it. We have to nationalize every central bank on the planet. Again, in other words, the people of Thailand own their bank, the people of America own their bank, the people of England own their bank, and no BS, and then we can actually do, credit-free loans to people. It would change the world. We would change our economy. It's the basis of everything good going forward, I think, is this sort of idea that we have to nationalize these central banks. We have to take these central banks out of the hands of these eight families, and we have to give it back to the people of each country and give them their sovereignty back, and also give them this economic, it's an economic engine that's just unrealized. Once you have credit-free, money that you can issue for zero debt to people, and it's no need to profit because there's no bankers. See, it's just a bureaucratic, the government, a wing, a branch of the Treasury is running it, and it's computers, it's just the way to go. And it takes us out of all the debt can be canceled. Then we have about 20, I think it's 23 trillion in the U.S. now, about 16, 17 trillion of that is to these families, Citibank, Chase, Bank of America, Wells Fargo. That's what I call the four horsemen of banking. Yeah. Those are the Rothschild, Rockefeller banks. But they're all intermarried. The Goldmans married the Sachs, and the Kuhns married the Loebs, and the Schiffs married into the Kuhn Loebs. And, it's just on and on and on. So, it's really people, it's stranger than fiction, but there's nobody that tells you about it, really. People touch it, and then they kind of get scared and run away. And they have so much power that you can see when Timothy Geithner comes out, and basically, is orchestrates this whole deal where we bailed out these bankers for $1 trillion. And Geithner was the Fed liaison, and they just got off scot-free. So not only do we allow them to maintain these control of these banks, but we have allowed them to get bigger. Each of those four banks I just mentioned has doubled in size in terms of assets since 2008, since the bailout. incredible. And the same thing happened during the savings and loan scandal where, you know, some more of these crooks. And by the way, you're totally right about the Corleone aspect. In fact, Meyer Lansky, you know, Santos Trafficante, Joe Bonanno, the Bronfman family that was, you know, involved with the – they're all Rothschild, Rockefeller lieutenant creations. And that's what's the most disturbing to me about Trump is he owns resorts internationally. See, a lot of the stock, and I don't know how he handled it, if it's a blind trust or he sold it or what, but he did own it before he got elected. And Resorts International is one of those companies which Meyer Lansky, you know, and the CIA and the Rothschilds, in other words, created. So, but their power is vast. But on the other hand, our numbers are vast, and we could easily strip them of that power.
Absolutely. Dean, I'm going to do a quick recap there while you get rid of the call. Sorry. There. 22 minutes to the top of the hour. Dean Henderson is on the line from Missouri, which must be a fabulous part of the world. Dean is a rancher as well, believe it or not. Go to hendersonlefthook.wordpress.com. His books are meticulously researched. I can't speak highly enough about them. They really are. We're talking about the House of Rothschild and how the Rothschild cartel, banking cartel family, their tentacles basically extend to every facet of everyday life, politics, business, finance. Dean's been describing how from the 17th century, the 1600s onwards, through intermarrying the most wealthy families in the world, including the royal families, they've built a dynasty that goes right up to today. Martin Noakes makes a brilliant comment on Twitter. He says, what's extraordinary, Martin tweets, about the Rothschilds is they never appear in the top 100 wealthiest people list because they don't want to. It's as simple as that. Now, Dean has just touched on Trump there. We can go down that road if Dean wants to. We've talked a lot about Trump. It is the contention of this programme that Trump is a screaming Rothschild Zionist. We got it wrong when we thought Clinton was going to win. It seems that Trump was chosen for reasons that have become obvious in the last couple of weeks. Dean, when they were doing what they were doing through the 17th, 18th and 19th centuries, there was very little opposition to it, it seems. And while we talk about the ease with which they were able to put together this massive family, this massive, massive mafia family with them at the very top of it, there was very little opposition. And while we think about that, a number of our listeners have asked us to put to you the stories and the evidence and all the testimonies about the influence of Satanism and satanic rituals and that sort of thing around this family as well. Do you want to comment on any of that?
Sure. Well, I mean, look, the Rothschilds controlled Barings, you know, which bankrolled the Chinese, both the Chinese opium trade and the African slave trade. I mean, it's horrible, horrible stuff, right? I mean, they were essentially the ones who got behind slavery, who got behind destroying people with drugs. What does that tell you about these people? And this was way back then. So if anything, I guess, you know, getting involved with this stuff would make you darker and closer to the dark side. And sure, I mean, there's I have no doubt that this is at its root, what we're fighting really is a spiritual battle between good and evil. It's pretty simple. And both Clinton and Trump were evil. We were screwed when Bernie got beat. It was done. It was over. I didn't have much heartburn the night of the election. I knew it was going to suck. Maybe sucked a little less than I thought if Clinton won, but I'm not so sure anymore.
Yeah.
But it just, you know, it's a terrible, terrible thing. And the Illuminati set this up. They set up Trump versus Clinton for a reason. And one of them was to create a gender war, you know, between intra-family, you know, man versus woman, because Hillary's the ultimate sort of, you know, whatever, pseudo feminist, you know, and Trump's the ultimate sort of pig, you know, and so it's bound to just feed into this gender division. So then you get a religious war. You get people hating Islam now, divide people that way, play right into the Trilateral Commission paper by Samuel Huntington, Clash of Civilizations. You can see it all happening. We're being instructed to hate Muslims so we can go to war with Muslims. And then you have a race war, which, you know, the cops and you know, just beating up black people and getting on camera with it now. And so, look, they've got us as divided as they've ever got us, almost, I feel like, in the United States through this phony election. People taking up camps, either one side or the other. and they're both rotten. So they're both lashing out crazy things, like the liberals are saying the Russians did it, you know, because they can't admit Hillary was a terrible candidate. And the conservatives are saying, oh, it'll be all right just because he appointed 10 Goldman Sachs guys yesterday. It's still going to be all right. Alex Jones crowd, they got fooled. And it's okay. They're good people got fooled. But look, this, yeah, it's bad. And I mean, as far as Satanism and stuff, you know, there's rumors out there about Melania Trump being some high class escort out of Macedonia, being trafficked even. And there's some, and there's Resorts International that people should check into.
Dean, let me just stop. Let me just stop you there, because this is ordinarily, if it wasn't you, if it was anybody else, I'd jump all over you now and I'd have a right good go at you there. But because it's you, I don't have to do that. What is it? Because some of this has been in the mainstream news, so I'm not worried about libel. In fact, Donald Trump can sue me for libel if he wants. he's not going to get very much. But is there any evidence that's a little bit better than circumstantial evidence that suggests what you just said there, that his wife was a victim of human trafficking even?
Well, all I can say is that comes from Webster Tarpley, and Webster Tarpley is one of the most brilliant researchers I know, and he is actually now being sued by the Trumps.
For saying that, as are the Daily Mail.
Yeah, for saying that, which may be a big mistake for them, but it's going to wipe Webster out, you know.
Yeah, she's taking a $200 million lawsuit against the Daily Mail in the UK.
Yeah, right. So, you know, I don't know, you know, but I do know about Resorts International. It's in my book, and it's well-researched, and I do know that he was the largest, almost primary shareholder of this entity before the election. And people can Google that and find that out, because it's public information. So Resorts International, you know, is bad. But you know, getting back to the topic, the Rothschild Satanism, and basically this is endemic among the elite, you know, and I think it's part of spiritual war. If you take the cheese, if you are willing to become that super rich and not have to work anymore, like everybody else has to work, you know, just have people take care of you. It's corrupting, and then you start to drink whiskey at 1 p.m, and you know, whatever, maybe a little coke at, I don't know, you know, just corrupting, you know, and you can buy anything you want, and I think it's money, it's the whole just accumulation of money system that, and they have the most, so they're bound to be the most evil, you know. They were behind Archduke Maximilian, the puppet of Mexico. Basically, they tried to invade the United States during the Civil War. And if it hadn't been for an 11th hour deployment from two Russian warships by Tsar Alexander II in 1863, we'd have been recolonized by England.
By England. Let me just then, today, Dean, because we've got about 15 more minutes, and I'm delighted you're back. I can't believe it was so long since you were on. You're a typical laid-back cowboy. I said to you before, you could get in touch with us and come back on. I'm delighted you're on. So who are the big Rothschild players today? We know that Trump definitely has a personal relationship, and I don't mean anything on an adult nature of an adult nature, but we know he gets on very well with Lynn Forrester, the Rothschild. We know this to be true. Her husband is Evelyn, the Rothschild. We have Nat Rothschild. Are these the Rothschilds of 2017? Are these the players in the family, or are these the front people for the family, these people?
Yeah, they're part of it, you know. Also, Edmund de Rothschild, that whole clan, they own the bank Privy SA in Lugano, Switzerland, and also Rothschild Bank AG of Zurich. So the Edmund de Rothschild branch. Then there's Lord Jacob Rothschild. He's basically owns the Rothschild Italia in Milan. He's in Italy. They kind of divided up all these countries between the progeny, you know, way back, and so. You know, one of their big entities is the Club of the Isles, and that thing was responsible for destroying the whole Asian economies, Thailand, Indonesia, also responsible for destroying the Russian ruble in 99. So this Quantum NV, that's a subsidiary of Club of Isles, you know, they've got, this is who owns the big stock in Royal Dutch Shell. They actually have their operations in Curacao. And ironically, that's the biggest oil refineries in the world are also there. Royal Dutch Shell and ExxonMobil both have one. They're just off the coast of Venezuela. That's why.
This family, Dean, this family have their fingers and their paws in everything, right? Everything. Let me just say a couple of things, not because we're worried about offending anybody, we're not, but you'll probably agree with my friend and colleague that what happened, the creation of the State of Israel, was a cover for these people. I've always felt it was a cover, and that Jews, you know, ordinary men and women like us, are as much of a victim of this as anybody else. Whenever you talk about this, it's thrown out that it's anti-Semitic and it's really hatred of Jewish people. Now, I don't believe the Jews are a race. The Jews are, you know, they're Caucasian like us. Their religious belief is what makes them Jewish, not their ethnicity. That's what I believe. I love them like I love everybody else.
Me too.
You know, and I know you've talked about this over the years. Jews are a victim of this. I mean, it's ironic. This is the centenary year of the Balfour Declaration, which came on the heels of the Sykes-Picot Agreement, which was just about robbing the Ottoman Empire blind, as we say in Ireland, completely illegal. And they were behind everything. What about, before we talk about, before we come back to the present day again, some Jewish men and women, and some of them are my personal friends, they get properly pissed off when we talk about the Rothschilds funding and hoping and basically betting on Hitler to succeed after World War II. But the fact is, it's true, isn't it, Dean?
Yeah, it's true. That's what people don't understand. It's Zionism is one of the most racist, dehumanizing movements in the world. It's a white supremacist movement, and so that's why people have such a hard time. But if you look, you know, if you look at that, of course they funded Hitler. I mean, of course they're behind all this eugenic stuff, trying to prove that white people had bigger brains than black people. I mean, this didn't start with Hitler. You know, this fascism, this, you know. But it's Zionism. It's the same thing. I mean, look at the way they treat Palestinians in the West Bank. They use them for experimentation and prisons and all kinds of crazy stuff, you know, that they do to these people. And they also, I mean, to get out of Nazi Germany, as I understand it, it's the rich people who got out, because if you were able to pay, I think it was $1,000 cash, you could get passage to Israel and out of there. And so you have kind of this selection of the wealthier Jews that came out of that horrible situation. And we're put in harm's way, yes. Since the Balfour Declaration was written, 30 years before Israel actually was created. So well planned. Of course, we know they stole the olive groves and they stole all the land of the Arab people who lived there, just slaughtered them with their death squads, which, you know, Moshe Dayan and Menachem Begin and some of these guys were part of these death squads that went in there, and just horrible. And so why would they do that? So, I mean, it's just, yes, they funded Hitler. Yes, they're behind all white supremacy, including what you see emerging right now, I think, worldwide. I mean, it's kind of frightening what I'm seeing, this far right emergence, and there's just this race component, and it's messed up.
And they're using guns.
They got to realize that's coming from the bankers. Yeah. The bankers are trying to do this to you, man. And they're not, you know, because they're the root of it. They've always, they're Nazis, okay? I mean, their political ideology is Nazism, and that's what they believe in.
And it's easy to understand, Dean. It's easy to understand why so many regular Jewish men and women, regular like us, in terms of, you know, they aspire to the same things we do, life, love, and happiness. It's easy to understand why they get upset about it. I can understand it.
Yeah.
And a very good friend of mine in London who's Jewish, you know, he struggles to understand it. And, you know, he believes that, well, you might get a pass, Richie. He would say you might get a pass, but everybody else, when they talk about this family, they just mean, you know, they just mean, what they mean is the dirty Jews. And it really hurts them. And I'm saying, no, it doesn't. And you really got to look into this, because it's got nothing to do with Judaism or the Jewish people. It's the sickness of these people.
And nothing to do with them. That's the thing. Nothing to do with Jewish people.
Nothing, Dean. Can I just ask you a question?
It has to do with Christian people or, you know, Buddhist people. But that, of course, they have to keep this topic off limits and call people anti-Semites, because if they didn't, then people would dig down and find what we just talked about and how deep and dark this goes and how it is involving Satanism. And Hitler was all into Satanism and all these things, and, you know, all his secret societies. And then he basically found out the secret societies, he kind of turned against the whole idea. And that's when they went after him and took him out. And Rudolf Hess parachuted into, you know, Buckingham Palace or whatever it was to try to stop that from happening. But that's when they took him out, just like they took Noriega out when he wised up and didn't help us out with the Contras anymore in Nicaragua, which he was doing. He was using his troops to invade Nicaragua for us with the CIA. And then when, once he said, I'm not going to do that anymore, all of a sudden, oh, he's a drug trafficker. Oh, you know, and not, you know, of course, not mentioning that the Bushes own the whole Colombian, you know, Caribbean side of Colombia and Panama, and made the most money out of it. And that's why they went down and bombed out that center part of town and got their money out of the banks and destroyed all these political people too, who are against the U.S. imperialism in Panama and all these other things. So, you know, you can demonize all these people you want, but you have to find out who's the demonizers, who are the demonizers. And that, you know, that's who runs the whole damn thing. And you'll never hear their names, and they'll never be demonized. And you have to know that.
You have to know who these people are.
That's how powerful they are. Until we all get together and bring it out and make a big stink of it and, you know, make it happen, I guess, which we're trying to do. You know?
You're doing a good job. Yeah. I remember a few years ago in Spain, I was out having a beer after a radio show that I did. And a Jewish woman, nice woman, had been listening to the program. And she got stuck into me and asked me about this family. And if this family is basically Don Corleone, how come, you know, how come they've managed to go pretty much unmolested through the centuries? Nobody's ever managed to stop them. And my answer was, and it wasn't childish, but it was about as simple as I could make it. I said, well, nobody's ever been after them because they basically took ownership of everything. They amalgamated with everybody. They amalgamated with all the other families. They took control of governments. They took control of money. So they owned the armies and the police forces of the world. And they were so big. You've got to look at them like the great mafia crime families. And for generations, the police could never get to the very top to cut off the head of the snake because of compartmentalization. And she was like, oh, yeah, I suppose. And I said, well, they do. They own everything. And the media. Who's ever written in the New York Times or the Washington Post? Who has ever written? I mean, your articles, mate, apart from your books, your articles on hendersonlefthook.wordpress.com about the House of Rothschild, those articles are unimpeachable, Dean. They are outstandingly written and researched. And nobody in mainstream media has ever attempted to do that, to go after these people, because their subsidiary companies, of which there are thousands, as you described in your books, they own everything.
Yeah. Everything. Everyone, not everyone, but most people are at some level bought off, you know, whether they like it or not, you know, and they just don't, because they get, it's debt. I mean, that's the whole thing they figured out. These Rothschilds, if they could get countries in debt, if they could get people in debt, if they, you know, get whole bunches of people in debt, just stay, keep them in debt, they will keep quiet because they don't know if the Rothschilds maybe own the company they're working for or whatever. And it's kind of a self-censorship, you know, like David Icke, you know, talks about really well, just about how we go around policing each other. Like, we don't even need cops anymore.
No,
they don't even need cops anymore. We just go around shutting people up who are telling the truth because we're told to, basically we're instructed to do that by the news things of these Rothschilds, by the nonprofits they fund and launder their tax and the drug money through, and don't have, you know, steer social policy through these NGOs. We're just brainwashed. We're told to be rats on the people who are brave. You know, it's all set up, you know, and it is kind of like the aliens already invaded, or, you know, with some people anyway, are just like the handlers here already of all of us. And we're just being sort of herded around like sheeple, you know, but, and it's kind of like that, but, you know, you just have to, I guess, be brave. And that's what I'm thinking of. Just hope the whole world seems to be lacking a bravery right now. Present company accepted. And, you know, there are some brave people doing some great things, but there's not enough of it. You know, we need more bravery. We need more people to be brave. And it's really not that hard, you know.
You know, it's been an amazing week. And although I appreciate the compliment, I'm not being modest when I say that I don't do anything. We're blessed that we have this wonderful radio studio, all bells and whistles. We're blessed that David Icke streams the program. We're blessed that Alternate Current Radio and Fab Radio does it. the people that are brave and courageous are people like you who have the balls to research this stuff and then write books as eloquently and as brilliantly as you do. All we do is provide the platform. You know, there's not very much brave about what I do, but I'm delighted that we can get people like you on the program. I want to mention Jean-Anne Crowley, who's a friend of ours, an actress there. She's in Dublin at the moment. She just wants to mention Sidney Blumenthal has an extensive piece in the London Review of Books this week comparing the Trumps to the Corleones, which is ironic, and what we've been talking about. I think you're well aware, Dean, that at the moment there's a real push by various charities to try and basically list the usage of the word Zionist and the word Rothschild as anti-Semitic words, and that anybody using those words are cowards. This is what I can't stand, you see. I'm not the bravest guy in the world, but I will not be called a coward by anybody. If I thought the Jews were dirty and the Jews were evil, I would fucking say, excuse my language, Jews are dirty and Jews are evil. Jews are not dirty, they're not evil. Jews are as good and as bad as anybody else on planet Earth. It's about this secret society as you described it and nothing else. Yeah. What do you say to people who, you know, because we know people that are being chased by these people and called racist and a serious stuff, Dean. What do you do when they come after you and they say you're a racist, you don't mean Zionist, you mean Jew because you're a coward?
Yeah, well, you just tell the truth. You just do what you always do, just like you did right there, and you just tell it like it is. And I mean, if you have facts, I don't know. You know, if they go that far where they're passing laws like that, or, you know, the word Rothschilds is banned, I mean, well, you know,
yeah.
Golly gee, we might just be time to go underground or something. I really don't know, Richie, but I'm not, you know, it won't shut me up. It shouldn't shut you up. I know it won't. And, you know, it's not going to work, because I think we went through that in the United States, and honestly, we kind of got past it. And it sounds to me like now it's kind of hitting Europe hard, you know. But we get the low on that anti-Semite stuff where, I mean, you know, it was just for a while there, it was dicey. But we just kind of, a lot of us just kept talking right through it and just backing up our stuff and saying what we just said about we got nothing against Jews. Obviously, this is way beyond even religion or anything. It's about who controls the world. And so that's all it is. We're trying to help everyone. And it doesn't matter what you believe to me. And I'm the most tolerant guy. And I cannot tolerate racism. I cannot tolerate any of that kind of stuff that divides us, you know, anyway. And that, so I do not want to divide Jews, Christians, Muslims. They're the ones that want to do that. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to say. And that's why I criticize Saudi Arabia just as often. And they're Islamic, but they're not. You know, it's not about Islam either. It's about Wahhabism, which was foisted upon them by British intelligence. It's all part of the game. It's all smoke and mirrors. And people got to quit being so naive, for one thing, and look at the reality of what's going on in this world.
You and I will do this again as soon as you want, mate. I've loved having you back on the program. Folks, go to hendersonlefthook.wordpress.com. Dean's books, Big Oil and Their Bankers in the Persian Gulf, The Federal Reserve Cartel. These are essential books, folks. I mean, these are essential books. Thanks for coming back on the program, Dean. Have a marvellous weekend. And do stay in touch, mate.
I appreciate it very much. You have a good one.
You too, my friend. Dean Henderson on the line to us there from the great state of Missouri on Thursday's Richie Allen Show. It's exactly the top of the hour. A lot of tweets came in there. I'm running over time, so I'm going to take a very quick break. When we come back, I'll read a few tweets, we'll take a bit of music, and then we'll get Scott Creighton on the programme. And believe me when I tell you, you want to meet Scott Creighton as well. Back in a couple of minutes.
Do not risk putting another pound in your bank account until you've heard this message. It's Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Death of Money. But today I'm urging you to claim a free copy of my brand new book, The Road to Ruin. Visit theroadtoruin.co.uk for full details now. Inside, I uncover the financial elite's secret ICE-9 plan to take full control of your hard-earned cash. To see how, visit theroadtoruin.co.uk right away. It's not too late to prepare. Claim your free copy at theroadtoruin.co.uk today.
Looking to arrange a mortgage? Confused by all the deals available? Let Manchester Mortgages do the work for you. Take advantage of our free mortgage review offer throughout February and March and see if we can save you money. We are whole-of-market brokers with access to hundreds of mortgage schemes across the UK. Call us on 0161 706 0242 or go to manchestermortgages.co.uk. Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage. Manchester Mortgages are a trading style of mortgages for you, North West Limited, who are authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
All eyes on Manchester, Saturday, March 4th, 2017. The Awakening at Bowler's Exhibition Centre, Manchester. Join the stars of the Ancient Aliens TV series and the leading figures in the field of ufology and ancient alien theories. Eric Von Daniken, author of the hit book Chariots of the Gods, and Emmy Award winner Linda Moulton Howe. Get tickets now at www.awakeningufo.com.
Welcome back. I'll see you there on March 4th if you're going to that. AwakeningUFO.com for tickets. Can't wait for that. Right, let's just quickly scroll down through a few tweets. Hi to Samba there. Great to see Dean back on the programme, Richie. Hi to Anne. Hi to Luga. Hi to Sue. I'm sorry for good Jewish people, as I am some of whom are amongst my friends. Please be very sorry for the good Muslims. I think Sue might have ran out of text options there. It's never been a Jewish conspiracy, ever. Hubert says, I didn't get a chance to ask that of Dean, I'm afraid, that question. Sorry about that. I will do that another time, though. Hi to Jason as well. Hi to Busy, to Mark Richards. Go to twitter.com, put Richie Allen Show in Twitter, all one word. And if you press enter there, you will see what other people are tweeting to me. And if you like, you can engage them. Simple as that. And try and be polite. I know. I'm not always polite. I am. I think 99% of the time I am. There are times when I run out of patience like as much as the next man or woman. Right, 4 minutes past the hour then. We're going to talk about one of the biggest stories of the week. And that is the Amnesty International story, which claimed 13,000 Syrians, innocent Syrians, innocent protesters, have been executed in a prison or at a prison in Syria. Now, it was an extraordinary claim, and of course it was picked up by the corporate media in the UK, in the US and everywhere else. Amnesty even made a cartoon, incredibly. They have offered no proof whatsoever, no documentary proof, that any of these executions took place. The story stinks to high heaven. One of the best articles of the week on any subject was written by Scott Creighton, who's going to join me in a couple of minutes' time. WillieLoman.wordpress.com. I'll tweet out links to Scott. He's an excellent broadcaster and writer, and we're going to talk about that. And Scott has also, like me, got a big bee in his bonnet about the fawning, the independent media fawning over Donald Trump, and we might talk about some of that as well. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter, richie@richieallen.co.uk. Broadcasting live on davidike.com, on Fab Radio 2 here in Manchester. We're on the TuneIn app as well. And what else are we on? I don't know. We'll be on everything soon enough. World domination is on the way. I don't think so. Scott Creighton joins the Richie Allen Show in a couple of minutes' time. In the meantime, this is Simple Minds and Alive and Kicking. What a song.
You turned me on.
What is she gonna do when it all breaks up? What is she gonna do?
Simple Minds, alive and kicking on the Richie Allen Show, 8 minutes past the hour. Welcome back to the programme. Thanks for your tweets and for your emails. Just very quickly, Tiger Johnson emailed to say, Richie, what? We're past the watershed. What the fuck is going on at the moment? I think George Orwell wrote 1984 as a warning, not as a manual. How did they manage to hijack even that one? Thanks, says Tiger. And Norman emailed me to say, speculation on my part, but the Blairites and the National Executive Committee, I believe, will continue to attempt to get rid of Corbyn. I'm living in Wigan next door to Lee. I reckon it probably is a done deal. Burnham will become Mayor of Manchester, paving the way for David Miliband to be given Lee a safe Labour seat, taking the Blairites towards further control of the party once again. Thanks, Norman. Great stuff. Well, I'm delighted that our next guest agreed to come on the programme. I think he's a brilliant writer. And I've been listening to interviews he's given to a wide variety of content creators and presenters on YouTube. He's a brilliant broadcaster as well. This week, for me, he's written the most outstanding article. In fact, he's written a series of articles and updates on his site, which is willieloman.wordpress.com. willieloman.wordpress.com, about Amnesty International's claim that there were 13,000 executions carried out at Saydnaya prison since 2011. They provided 84 witnesses, they said, but didn't offer a shred of documentary evidence that any of this has happened. Brilliant journalism from a terrific journalist. Let's welcome back to the... Let's welcome for the first time to the programme, the first of many, Scott Creighton, who's in Florida. Scott, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing well. How you doing?
I'm really, really, really good, and I can hear you loud and clear. Congratulations on some first-rate journalism on your site, Scott. It really is terrific, mate. Brilliant
stuff. Thank you very much.
You know, when I talked about it, and of course I credited you when I talked about it earlier in the week, people got in touch with us and they said, Richie, why would Amnesty do anything like that? Amnesty have always been there for the downtrodden, for the tortured, for the disappeared. Why would they do it? Do you want to answer that, Scott? Do you want to take that one first?
Well, Amnesty gets some funding from westernized nations, the United Kingdom, the United States, U.S. State Department. There's also connections. Human Rights Watch is also... I would be surprised, you know, that because of what Amnesty International has done over the years documenting the crimes against the Palestinian people, I would be surprised. I was surprised that they did it. But the more you look into it, the more you realize, you know, they have in the past helped with these regime change operations by providing a little bit of either support for various pieces of propaganda that came out in the past or creating the propaganda themselves. And also, if you look, Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch as well, if you look at their numbers as far as what they claim civilians killed, say, in the Bush administration days when they induced shock and awe in the early stages of Iraq, how many people they claim were actually killed, their numbers are incredibly low. I saw something, I forget where it was, but they were talking about, I think it was Amnesty International's numbers as far as how many civilians Barack Obama has actually killed with drones. And I think, don't quote me on this, but I think the number was like 230 between Iraq and Syria, and maybe 50 or so in Yemen. Those numbers are incredibly low. So, to be honest, I myself was a little bit taken aback when this thing came out. I looked at it. But then I remember, you know, they get funding from them. And it's not all of Amnesty International that does this. I think what they do is like they do with any organization. They get people, their people, to be hired by Amnesty International or Human Rights Watch or any of these other organizations that actually do some good work, B'Tselem perhaps. And when they have them, you know, in place and working for them, they make contact with them and say, okay, we need a little bit of help with this. And they produce it. And I think that's exactly what this Nicolette Weldman did with this ridiculous bunk propaganda.
It's a really good point you made there, because I've obviously, coming from commercial radio background, I've interviewed various spokesmen and women from Amnesty over the years, and I think it's a really good point you make. You'd have to imagine a lot of people working for organisations like that are doing so for pure reasons, and they're genuinely against oppression and murder and torture wherever it happens. But this is just staggering, Scott. It's a staggering thing, because our listeners, I know they're all ears. By the way, Scott, you can follow Scott on Twitter. I've just tweeted his Twitter handle, which is @WillieLoman1. That's @WillieLoman1. Love that. Death of a Salesman reference. I love that. @WillieLoman1 is where you'll find Scott on Twitter there. What's staggering more than anything, Scott, is the fact that they would just expect to get away with it. You know, that they just know that nowhere in mainstream media is anybody going to challenge the fact that they have no evidence. Talk about that. They've offered no evidence.
Well, it's a time thing, too. Remember, I mean, I wrote something about that yesterday. They don't really necessarily need this to be proven, because they know it's not. The more people look into it, they say, wait a minute, you got 31. This is based on the statements of 31 former moderate terrorists who were sent into Syria to destabilize a country and to force a change of the government there. Why would anyone take what they say seriously? Especially when you consider the fact, this is the glaring contradiction with this whole thing. It's really based on the statements from 31 members, people who had left Sednaya prison. And they were all there. I think one was featured on Al Jazeera, former Free Syrian Army guy sent in there to help destabilize the country and terrorize the population and force regime change. They created all kinds of horrible things. He was arrested. He was captured. He was kept in Sednaya prison, and miraculously, he was released. He was set free. He spent 2.5 years in Sednaya prison for acts of terrorism, and they ended up letting him go. He signed a thing saying he wasn't going to be a terrorist anymore. Whatever he did, they actually let him go. This is what this story is based on, really. And when you think about it, and you look at all the hyperbole and all the things that they say about, oh, they're just hanging everybody. Oh, my goodness, it's just mass extermination. They want to kill everybody who has anything to do with trying to, with the Free Syrian Army and the opposition, except for these 31 people who they just let go.
And you know what, Scott, do you know what's really frustrating about that is, again, people won't ask questions like, isn't that a difficult thing to do, you know, to execute so many people by hanging in one go? Why wouldn't they shoot these people?
Right.
You know, why would you do that? I mean, I know what Sky News, I know what Fox News would say.
well, the shots would alert the other prisoners. And they tell you all this absolute garbage, but they just wouldn't hang people like that. They wouldn't do that.
It's a slow process to kill people. It doesn't always work. You got all kinds of issues. And if you look at this, the ridiculous, they actually, we'll talk about this a little bit later, but they actually, this is such a major propaganda campaign for them. Not only did they do a video of this before they released the actual report, a nice heartwarming hearts and minds kind of video, you know, you really want to get in there and help those poor terrorists because they're being treated so badly. But they actually put together, they got a company, and the company put together this 3D model. And they actually have a website. It's connected with Amnesty International. You can go there, and you can go through. You can do a fly-through of the Sadana prison. But it's all based entirely on the say-so of these 31 terrorists who, for some reason, they let go and didn't hang these guys. It's based on absolutely nothing, on no concrete evidence. It's like, do you remember if you go back to 2003 when Donald Rumsfeld was on the news and he was saying, oh, yeah, they have all sorts of these caves.
Oh,
they've
God.
Got more than just one of these caves.
My God.
They have many caves. Could you imagine if they had 3D modeling back then? He could have actually, you know, done a fly through of the caves that didn't exist.
I'm so glad you mentioned the caves. Do you remember the Times of London? This is supposed to be one of the great pillars of journalism in the United Kingdom. The Times of London even drew a cartoon to accompany the bullshit from Rumsfeld. These super caves that were like something from a James Bond movie, do you remember? And there were supposed to be so many of them. And didn't Charlie Rose interview Rumsfeld? And Rose sat there nodding along without saying, come on, Rummy.
Right.
Nobody could build a cave like that in the Tora Bora Mountains, right?
And when he was asked about, and eventually they showed a hole in a small little cave, and they said, well, it's not quite exactly the same thing that we pictured, you know, 3 years ago. But, I mean, he was asked about him, where's this one cave? And he goes, oh, no, that's not one cave. There's many caves.
That's right.
And where are they? They're north, south, east, and west of Baghdad.
That's right. They're everywhere.
They're everywhere. Everywhere you look. I think the reason here is that they want to get this out. They wanted to get it out right before the peace talks. They wanted to push this propaganda so they could push an agenda with the UN and hopefully derail the peace talks. But they knew that it wouldn't stand the scrutiny of the light of day. They absolutely knew that. That's why they had to rush it out as quickly as they could, get everybody to talk about it as much as they can. And what they're going to do is the same thing they do with all their other propaganda pieces. They'll let it go. They'll drop it. It'll be lost kind of in the history for about 2 or 3 months. And then what you'll hear is the same thing over and over again. Politicians and talking heads, they'll make reference back to it. They'll talk back to it and say, oh, well, yes, but, you know, you have to get rid of Assad because if you don't get – look at what Assad did. He slaughtered 13,000 of his own people, hung them all to death. It was like Auschwitz or something. And all they'll have to do is mention it because people will be able to go back and say, is he telling the truth? And they'll look at the CNN BS or they'll look at the New York Times BS or they'll look at – and it'll be there. So it'll be truth.
You know,
even as ridiculous as it is and as bunk is baseless as it is, that's how this stuff becomes truth.
You've just answered a brilliant question put to me by one of our listeners the other day. They asked me about the sort of income that I earned when I was working in commercial radio, and it was a decent-ish living, Scott. It wasn't marvellous, but it was good. And then one of the listeners came back to me and said that they read that Kay Burley at Sky News is getting £650,000 a year, which is a massive salary to be reading, you know, a teleprompter, basically, to be reading autocue 4 or 5 times a week, huge amounts of money. And you just answered why, because the listener said, well, why did he get paid so much? Well, they get paid so much not to ask the sort of questions that you're asking in your articles, which is, come on. Can I just put this to you, Scott? I was going to send you an email today, and I should have done it. It was so close to airtime that I didn't. You might not be aware, but CNN ran a story today. They led with a story today about a Russian businessman who's been poisoned by the Russians. Right now, what was extraordinary about it was his wife was interviewed CNN admitted that they couldn't substantiate the story. They couldn't even get confirmation from the hospital that the guy had been poisoned. They just took the guy's wife's word for it. They ran the story, and then they cut to John McCain talking about how dreadful this was, and it was further evidence that people were being killed in Russia for speaking out against Putin and his administration. This is an absolute avalanche of propaganda, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I did hear about that. I saw it developing. I think it was last night, was it?
You're right, last night, yeah.
And this woman said that what's he officially there for? He's officially there for over-intoxication of some foreign substance. So I heard you talking earlier about it during the show today, and I was like, well, what does that sound like to you? Does it sound like maybe he might have OD'd? Maybe, I don't
vodka.
Know. Vodka. Yeah, vodka or heroin. I don't want to make any assumptions. It could be just a guy got sick. But the fact that, there are the way you make it up the ladder of success in the corporate media world is you don't ask the wrong questions. You take things at face value, because if you don't, you're not going to last very long, because it's the world we live in is paper thin. The reality that they have constructed with their fake news is paper thin. And if you can't tread very, very lightly and move as you climb up the social ladder, you're going to fall.
I want to mention your site, willieloman.wordpress.com. Follow Scott on Twitter, at willieloman1. So what's your gut feeling then? This avalanche of propaganda, to me, spells very, very bad news for the future, because they either want to go in to Syria or they want to partition the country. What do you think, Scott?
I think they want to do both. I think they're going to have to go into Syria, because Assad has made it very clear that he's not going to accept giving up any of Syria. He's going to, as he said about a month ago, he's going to rid all of Syria, all of the integrity of Syria, from these terrorists, from foreign terrorists. And the Russians, I think about 3 or 4 months ago, tried to get him to maybe talk about giving up a little portion for the Kurds, or federalizing certain parts of it. But Assad has been very clear he's not going to do that. And I think that really goes to the heart of what this is all about. I think that this particular piece of propaganda makes it very, very clear. She actually says, Nicolette Weldman says in the report at the end, she has a list of, you know, what she wants everyone to do, including the General Assembly at the UN, Russia, the UN Security Council. You know, it's all basically saying they're not going to accept a deal that leaves Assad, because ultimately they blame Assad and the leadership, the legitimate leadership in Syria, for what they claim happened in Saydnaya prison. So I think going into this peace deal meeting in Geneva, which, by the way, was supposed to start on February the 8th. This report comes out on February the 7th. It was postponed on January 27th by the Russians, by Lavrov. But I think the wheels were already in motion to get this released, so they went ahead and released it anyway.
Because it would have been a disaster, right? Because they failed to do what they wanted to do, which was to depose Assad, get their own puppet in there. They failed to do that. They know now that no matter how many jihadists they throw at the situation and at Assad, it won't be good enough, because Assad is protected by Russia, so there's nothing they can do there. Any peace talks are disastrous again for the NATO countries, for the NATO countries and Israel. So what you've described really is their only play now. Go in. And this is what this propaganda is about. If Western civilians like you and me, Scott, if we genuinely believe that this guy is having slaughter parties in prisons, horrendous things like that, we're less likely to stand up and say, no, don't go in there. And before we know it, what's the next play? No-fly zone. That sounds smart to me, right? No-fly zone will be announced in the next few weeks.
Right. Well, the next play is to make sure that the peace talks are dead.
Yeah.
After that, I think that Trump is already playing with the idea. I could be wrong, but I've heard reports, or at least they're out there, that he is playing with the idea of approving a new fly zone or safe zones, however they want to put it. That'll be a nightmare. Obviously, there's going to end up being two planes, one from Syria, one from the United States, flying too close to each other. Someone's going to get a little itchy trigger finger, and then there'll be all out war, and we'll have to go into Syria. They probably will end up putting boots on the ground, as much as I hate to say it, because I think there's just too much at stake. Several times this thing looked like it was over. When they tried the Syrian chemical weapons red line, that was exposed by independent media, by independent journalists. It was spread across the internet. Obama knew he couldn't go in. He couldn't use the chemical weapons to justify it because he was his own mercenary moderate terrorist that used the chemical weapons in the first place. So he had to back off. We kind of thought at that time it was gonna subside and they'd start moving out. And in fact, if you recall, this is about a year ago, they did. They actually started putting some of them on planes and shipping them in Turkey and shipping them down to Yemen, so they could further destabilize what was developing down there. And then, of course, you know, Russia gets involved, and over the last 6-7 months, it's really kind of starting to step back. Of course, they had the huge success in Aleppo, and they liberated Aleppo. And after that, it really did look like they were going to have to just pull these guys out and try to find some deal, some way to make a deal with Assad. But I'll tell you, they just won't stop.
They won't stop, will they? And can I ask you this, Scott? I keep doing this because it's important that I do it. Scott's website, willieloman.wordpress.com, @willieloman1 on Twitter. This is great journalism. It really is. I'd heard of Scott. I'd come across him before. Why I didn't invite him on the programme, I have no idea. But he's on now, and it's good that he is on. It's 28 minutes past the hour. Who is, and this is not a loaded question, it's going to sound like it is, but I want your opinion, and I'm not going to influence your opinion. Who is Donald Trump, Scott? Who is this guy?
Well, when he first came out, first of all, I want to say I'm left of Bernie Sanders. And when your previous commenter was talking, and he sounds like a brilliant guy, when he said that Sanders lost the nomination, I kind of cringed because Bernie Sanders did not lose the nomination. Let's just get that right out in the open. The nomination was stolen from Sanders and Sanders supporters. And it wasn't stolen by somebody just kind of putting the finger on the – there's massive election fraud that took place in places like California and certainly in Brooklyn, where people were stricken off of the voting the registration rules so they couldn't cast a vote for Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders should have been the nominee running up against Donald Trump.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, what would have happened then is Bernie Sanders would have won. And I only say unfortunately because I put myself in the position of the people who actually run this country and a lot of other countries to boot. There's no way they would have allowed that to happen. Sanders is not a true socialist, but he was pretty close and he had some good ideas and he had some really good ideas. And if he had been allowed to win the nomination, I would have gotten out there and voted for him. As it turned out, I didn't vote for either of them. So I just want to toss that out there real quick. As far as who Donald Trump is, Donald Trump is he's a product. He went into a meeting right after winning the election with Barack Obama. And Barack Obama came out and said, you know, I don't win. We got along okay. He said, we got along okay because he's not an ideologue. He doesn't have, you know, strong set of beliefs. What he is he's pragmatic. And he was very excited about that because pragmatic means that, if you recall, Barack Obama was called pragmatic in 2008,
yeah,
but he won
right.
as well. Right. What it means is that he will bend. He will facilitate whatever needs to happen. I think that in a lot of ways, what the Donald Trump that ran would have been or could have been a good president, but he's not going to be the Donald Trump that ran. He's going to be the Donald Trump that is now putting people who want to privatize everything in place. He's a Donald Trump that has Sessions now. He's a Donald Trump that is signing executive orders not to get rid of the Obamacare plan, which is fascist in my opinion and completely unconstitutional because of the mandate. He just wants to revise it, which means he's just going to make it worse. So I don't think that Donald Trump, the only redeeming thing about Trump is this. I think that what he says about not wanting to be imperialist, but not wanting to have a great footprint across the Middle East, letting other countries decide their own fate, I think he means that. And I think that's one of the reasons, probably one of the only reasons, he's hated so much by the deep state.
That's interesting, that. And that brings us to, because we get this all the time from people, Richie, why are you not supporting Trump? Now, the interesting thing about that is people obviously don't know anything about me if they ask that question. It's a dumb question to ask me because I don't believe in politics. I don't believe in democracy. It doesn't exist, in my opinion. I wouldn't vote for anybody, no matter who they were. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I get this all the time. Everybody's against him, Richie. The media is against him. Everybody is. Therefore, that is proof of itself that the guy is genuine and he's going to take on the oligarchs. What do you say to that when they say that to you?
I'm not sure how he can take on the oligarchs. He keeps putting them in his cabinet. So, I mean, I'm not, yeah. Unless there's a little, you know, family infighting. Like I said, he's got some issues. People think it's monolithic, you know, this whole, you know, deep state masters of the universe thing, that they all have one mindset and they all think the same way. They all do think the same way. They worship mammon and that's it. But they all have different avenues of interests to explore. And I think that there is a rift right now between a number of them. It's not just, it's not broken down the fake divide between Republicans and Democrats. It's a one-party system that we live in, at least in this country. I think you guys are kind of feeling the same thing over there. Greece certainly learned that recently. It's a one-party system. But, you know, there are interests that are at stake here, a lot, and big-time interests at stake here. You know, I think that... some people think that Hillary Clinton was supposed to lose to Donald Trump. I don't necessarily think that's the case. I think Hillary Clinton was supposed to lose to Jeb Bush, but that didn't work out because they couldn't stand Jeb Bush. But then when it came right down to it, the only thing they cared about was making sure Bernie Sanders was not in that race. After that, I think it didn't really make a whole bit of a difference. Goldman Sachs executive said that he didn't care if it was Trump or Clinton, because he basically owns them both.
And that echoes, yeah, statements made by going back to Dean in the first hour, echo statements made by the Rothschild family many, many, many moons ago. I don't care who sits on the throne of England, give me control of the money supply, that's all I really want. Scott Creighton is on the line. It's 26 minutes to the top of the hour. We've got Scott for another 15 minutes or just over that. Scott, I'm not being cheeky, but I'm going to play you a bit of audio. I'm going to play you a little bit of Alex Jones. This is Alex at the inauguration. Now, I get accused of picking on him. I've known Alex a long time, and there was a time when he was a regular guest on programmes that I made. And like my friend on the Isle of Wight says, I believe in something in the bank. You know, whenever you have a go at somebody, you should always remember what they've done in the past. And Alex has done some things in the past that I've, you know, liked a lot, and I've championed him over the years. But I want to play you this bit of audio. You don't have to comment on him individually if you want, but I want to talk about what's happened to the independent media in the United States. So this is Alex Jones. We've played this clip a few times, but I want to play it again at the inauguration. An excitable Alex, to say the least.
And I got a senator! I don't need a bullhorn! I don't need anything! The will of the Republic will dominate this BS! Yeah. 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 1776,
baby.
1776 will commence again. You like it? This is just the info war. Imagine you get in a physical fight with us. It's over. You understand that? I know you do now, don't you? We haven't taken the gloves off. And if you want to keep pushing with your commie Chinese, everybody else, we're going to blow your ass off the map. All the secret weapons ain't in the control of you anymore, are they?
Who's he threatening there, Scott?
He's threatening the left.
He's threatening anybody who disagrees with him with violence, right?
Yeah, he's threatening the left. Look, when a country is neoliberalized, And they're neoliberalized. Nobody ever votes. First of all, they're all neoliberalized in opposition to what they want. Because once you understand what neoliberalization is and once you understand what austerity is, nobody wants it. So when you neoliberalize a country, one of the first things that you have to do is certainly you have to kind of crack down on dissidents. And you see that from Pinochet. You see that from Suharto in Indonesia. It's always the same. You have brown shirts that come out. You have people who are really, you know, into and kind of fascist in nature and angry. India recently went through about 10 years ago this kind of thing, where I don't mean to, you know, be an alarmist or anything, and I certainly don't mean to say this is what Alex Jones is going to be doing. But it certainly sounds a lot like it. And I've been writing this about Jones for many years. And that is, you know, when it all comes down to it and the stuff hits the fan, you're going to have a class of people who are going to be really militaristic. They're going to be civilians. They have to be civilians. Otherwise, you know, the government can be held accountable. And they're going to be running around doing things, silencing people, rounding people up. I know for many years, Alex Jones said, you know, Obama's going to be loading people onto the trains and taking them off someplace to the camps.
The FEMA camps, that's right.
FEMA camps, right, the FEMA camps. Well, we've seen Obama come and go. There were no FEMA camps. But, and don't get me wrong, Obama's as much of a fascist as Clinton was, as Bush was. They're all the same. But when you get to a certain point and you really have to shut down because everything's not working anymore, and so you really have to clamp down on it. And I think, unfortunately, who did you have on yesterday? Was it Bartlett? Was it Kevin Barnett.
Kevin Barrett, that's right. Kevin was on yesterday, yeah, talking about this. Yeah.
I had him on the other day, talking about the next false flag operation. Yeah, I see that as a strong possibility under the Trump administration. Whether or not Trump is involved in it or knows about it, that's a totally different subject. I would doubt that. But I see that kind of thing happening. And you're going to see a lot of people coming out like Alex Jones, is a little character he just did just now, sounding just like that and meaning it. And Alex Jones meant it right there.
There's a danger to this, you see, Scott, and that is he influences a lot of people whom I wouldn't silence him, by the way. I'm not in any way, and I know Scott hasn't ever suggested. I would never, ever silence or censor anybody like that. I want those people out in the open where you can hear what they're saying. The only worry I have with a guy like him is there's a lot of militia folk who listen to that garbage. And he talked about FEMA camps. And I remember interviewing Jones years ago, and he used to very eloquently talk about the wrongs of interning Japanese Americans in World War II era, United States, and the wrongs of that. And of course, he was right. And Jones used to talk about FEMA camps and dissidents to the empire were going to be interned in there. But I guarantee you, and he's not here to defend himself, he's been invited to come on this program to debate me on these issues, and he's ignored me. And I have his cell phone number, and he's ignored me. And I've said to him, look, come on and talk about these issues, because what I think you're doing, Alex, is now, you're now sounding like a guy who would quite happily round up Muslims that you didn't like the look of and chuck them into a FEMA camp. So you could keep an eye on them.
Muslims, leftists, progressives, people who just out there protesting the wrong thing at the wrong time. Yeah, absolutely.
The guy has actually said this week on a broadcast that he would die for Donald Trump. And there's been times when he's cried. And I've begun to wonder how much of this is pure theatre and how much of it is genuine. How much of the tears are genuine, that he's in some sort of rapturous ecstasy type mental state that Trump is in. And that this is it. This is the answer to all of his problems and all of the world's problems. How much of that is a genuine feeling and how much of it is theatre? But that sort of garbage that we played a second ago, that is dangerous stuff, that. But I would rather he did that, and I would rather he broadcast that than he didn't. I would never censor him. That's just my opinion.
I'll tell you, that you listen to him, and I've seen him do his shtick before, and it is theater, and it is a production, it is performance. But there's an anger and there's a hatred that fuels it. But there's also, again, what we talked about before, there's moving up that ladder. That's, you know, and he's talking to people, like you said a minute ago, he's talking to people who feel that way. He's talking to people who actually have that kind of hate, who actually have that kind of passion. There's a lot of people out there.
Yeah, he brings we're going to finish with him and stop talking about him, but he brings a guy on from the UK called Tommy Robinson, who is one of the most vile scumbags to ever walk the streets of the UK. He's a football hooligan. He's a violent thug in every sense of the word. And they bring him on to InfoWars to talk about problems with Islam in the UK and no-go areas where you can't go down because Muslims... Listen, you and I both know, Scott, you know, immigration is not a taboo subject. Immigration is a tool used by the elites to divide and conquer. There's no doubt about that. And mass immigration has led to the destruction of services in countries like this, in Greece and everywhere else, and it needs to be dealt with. We're not idiots. We're not saying, oh yeah, let everybody in. No, it's foolishness that it isn't black and white. But yeah, they bring people like Tommy Robinson on to talk about immigration. You know, you could choke on the irony. 18 minutes to the top of the hour. Scott Creighton on the line. Great to have him on. I've already tweeted out the article today, but you can find all his articles at willieloman.wordpress.com. Bookmark the site and do follow Scott on Twitter. It's at willieloman1. Absolute final question on Jones, because the listener has asked me to put it to you. Do you think he was a plan from the beginning? Was this guy always meant to be there to do what he does, or has he changed? How do you see that?
Well, you can go back to 2000 for your listeners who know Bill Cooper. I had a great deal of respect for Mr. Cooper. He taught me a lot just from being able to watch him and read his work. He didn't have a high opinion of Mr. Jones prior to his untimely end, and I think that when Jones was just doing public access television, I think he was just a regular guy trying to do it and to make a name for himself and to tell people some bit of truth as he saw it. I think he was cultivated. I think somebody picked up on it and saw he had some potential, gave him a little leg up. He was certainly allowed access to the whatever that place is they go and do that retreat, so he could do his, you know, owl god thing with baby worship, whatever that was. But he had access to it. Somebody gave him access to it. So somebody's had a hand guiding him for a long time. I think I sent you an email about a statement that he made talking about a great country and a great leader, talking about Israel and Netanyahu.
Yeah.
So there have been people who have said he has Mossad connections, may be true. It could possibly be true. He certainly never said a word during the bombing of Palestine, of Gaza.
Never mentioned it,
three times. Never mentioned it. Never talks about it.
How could you call yourself an independent media producer, presenter, or program and not comment on the barbarism of what happened in Operation Protective Edge? How could you not do anything about that? You had to ask questions about that. We've got about 5 minutes left, by the way. Scott Creighton is on the line. Tampa, Florida. Sounds lovely. I was in Miami a few years ago. I wasn't there very long, but I loved it. Tell me this, Scott. There's a parliamentary inquiry underway here into fake news. Channel 4 News are running a nightly feature on fake news. We're being told it's a big threat to democracy. You have a website with terrifically well-written and well-researched articles on it. Your articles are challenging the mainstream narrative on these issues. What's going on with fake news? Is this something that we should be worried about, or is it something that we just kind of shrug our shoulders and carry on? What do you say?
Well, I tell you something. If you wanted to send them some clues and some tips on where they can find some fake news, they can look up Nicolette Weldman, and they can look up the Amnesty International study called Human Slaughterhouse, and because it is totally baseless, it is completely, absolutely baseless, and yet that is real news. The stuff that I do, that Activist Post does, the kind of stuff that Brandon Tuberville does, Vanessa Beale does, Eva Bartlett does, you do, that's fake news, according to them. that's really some Orwellian stuff there. And I know I'm talking to somebody in Manchester in England, and I certainly have no place to lecture anybody on Orwell. But that's some really Orwellian stuff. Do we have to worry about it? Absolutely, we have to worry about it. And it's not just the governments that are doing it. It's Google, it's Facebook, it's Twitter, it's all these big internet service providers. They really, if they're going to survive this major turn to fascism, one thing they have to do is make sure that their BS does not get questioned and does not get exposed. So yeah, they're gonna clamp down on the internet. They're gonna clamp down on what they call fake news, and we have to struggle against that. We have to fight against that.
Making it difficult for people like you and others to earn a small token for producing your work, which of course would make it very difficult. This is, I know they're working with Google, and I know one or two of the clickbait sites have already been demonetized. And even though I despise those sites, and I despise your newswire.com and Sean Addle, particularly despise them, I wouldn't see that happen. I wouldn't see that happen. People don't believe me. They say, oh, Richie, you sound like Mother Teresa. I'm like, no, I'm not Mother Teresa, but even though these people are despicable, I would stand up for the crap that is your newswire and let them put out their weekly world news stories if they want. Because if we allow them get taken off the internet, if we allow them get demonetized, well then, who's going to, you know, who's going to speak for us when it happens to us? It's
absolutely
as simple as that.
I mean, Chomsky said, listen, he stands up for free speech. Whenever someone says, well, why don't you sue these people when they come after you? They call you an anti-Semite and this, that, the other. He said, look, I believe in free speech. And if you attack, you can't attack. Sorry about that.
Don't worry, Scott. Go ahead.
If you don't stand up for the speech that you hate the most, you don't stand up for free speech. You don't believe in free speech. It's the speech that you hate the most that's what you really have to stand up for and give that person the right to say it or to print it or to publish it. Because if you don't believe in free speech.
Do me a favor, mate, will you? We're just about out of time. I want to mention again, willieloman.wordpress.com and at willieloman1 on Twitter. Do us a favor, Scott. Come back again real soon. It's been an absolute joy to have you on the program. It's been fascinating to get your insight on the show. Your articles are brilliant, and that piece this week on Amnesty is absolutely brilliant. Meticulously researched, a dissection of a crap and a very dangerous story. It's brilliant. I've tweeted it out there. I'll give you the final word, mate. It's been a very quick 40 minutes, and like I said, I'll be happy to have you back on again anytime. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, and I'd be very happy to be back on anytime you want. Just give me a holler. I've been a fan of your work for quite some time, and it's an honor to be here. Thank you very much.
The honor was ours, Scott. Have a marvelous weekend. Keep up the brilliant work there. Really appreciate it. Thanks a lot. The lovely Scott Creighton on the line to us from Tampa, Florida. willieloman.wordpress.com. That's where you'll find his articles. It is 11 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. Here's a very quick break. When we come back, I'll read some of your tweets.
Do not risk putting another pound in your bank account until you've heard this message. It's Jim Rickards here, best-selling author of Currency Wars and The Death of Money. But today I'm urging you to claim a free copy of my brand new book, The Road to Ruin. Visit theroadtoruin.co.uk for full details now. Inside, I uncover the financial elite's secret ICE-9 plan to take full control of your hard-earned cash. To see how, visit theroadtoruin.co.uk right away. It's not too late to prepare. Claim your free copy at theroadtoruin.co.uk today.
Looking to arrange a mortgage? Confused by all the deals available? Let Manchester Mortgages do the work for you. Take advantage of our free mortgage review offer throughout February and March and see if we can save you money. We are whole of market brokers with access to hundreds of mortgage schemes across the UK. Call us on 0161 706 0242 or go to manchestermortgages.co.uk. Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage. Manchester Mortgages are a trading style of mortgages for you, North West Limited, who are authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. they become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbayerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
All eyes on Manchester, Saturday, March 4th, 2017. The Awakening at Bowlers Exhibition Center, Manchester. Join the stars of the Ancient Aliens TV series and the leading figures in the field of ufology and ancient alien theories. Eric Von Daniken, author of the hit book Chariots of the Gods, and Emmy Award winner Linda Moulton Howe. Get tickets now at www.awakeningufo.com.
Lovely. Welcome back to the program. Then it's Thursday, the 9th of February, 2016. I am Richie Allen. Thanks to Jim Dale. And Unforeseen is tweeting me about the website. The website is not down, my friend. Aaron Calland is rebuilding it. And hopefully, in the next couple of days, it will be up and running. I might have been a bit hasty in saying that it would be ready yesterday or today. Probably was being a bit hasty. That's the way I am. I'm an excitable type, but it'll be ready when it's ready, and I'll be able to blog on there and write articles. And Aaron is a great, I can't say enough about Aaron Calland, so that'll be lovely. That, you see, I'm coming off Facebook because they can stick their fake news up their arses. I'm not sticking around. And you know, the great websites, davidicke.com, jimmars.com, whatreallyhappened.com, maria.net, these great websites, these great researchers that have been around for years, they always kept their websites. I can have a website, I know somebody who's going to host it for me, and I won't be taken down, and I can say what I want. I've never libeled anybody anyway. I can say what I want about what I want, and people will know to go to my website. No Facebook algorithms can stop people who want to find out what it is that I'm... And this sounds very, very narcissistic. It's not meant to sound like that. I won't be writing long-winded rants about stuff. I'll be presenting evidence that has been gathered by other people and using it to make a point on, or in articles on my website, and I'll do that and people will know where to go. It's as simple as that. Okay? I'm not sticking around. Facebook is a nonsense. It is an absolute nonsense. Alex Stouse said, please get Scott back in the future for an extended interview. There isn't enough time. This is a wonderful thing, isn't it? And I never get annoyed, really, about this. Some people would get annoyed, but I don't get annoyed. It's a wonderful thing. We get amazing people on, and 40 minutes flies by, and people say, oh, Richie, you should have longer. And I used to kind of think, oh, Jesus, you know, what's wrong with people? But I understand it. People like Scott, if Scott was to be interviewed on Channel 4 News, they get 6.5 minutes if they're lucky. What a wonderful thing it is that we can produce programs like this where journalists, men and women from academia and from elsewhere can come on and get a long, 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 long time to express their points of view and to discuss the evidence that they're presenting. That's the beauty of programs like this. So do me a favour. Do support it when you can. Go to paypal.me/Richie Allen. That's paypal.me/Richie Allen, only if you can. And put a couple of quid in the meter to help our significant production costs, because they are significant. I can't tell you. Getting to the end of the month every month. But luckily, we always do, and it's thanks to your support. So do continue to support the programme. I'll be grateful for it. Now listen, this is the last programme that will broadcast, or that has broadcast, from 8 p.m. GMT. Starting this coming Monday, 13th of February, we will broadcast live at 7 p.m. GMT. That's 7 to 9. So it's a two-hour programme, as always, 7 p.m. GMT till 9 p.m. That works out at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It works out at 11 a.m. Pacific Time. That's in the US. It works out at 8 p.m. Central European Time. But more importantly, it's 7 p.m. here, UK, London, local time, 7 p.m. That's the new programme from Monday. Now, Jim Fetzer was promised a return go at me, and Jim is going to be on the programme on Monday. But before that, on Monday, Dr. Nick Begich is going to be back. You'll know Nick, of course, HARP and Mind Control. You know all about Nick. He'll be on the programme on Monday, live from Alaska. That's Monday at 7 p.m. GMT. Of course, you and I will chat on Sunday morning at 11 a.m. when Sunday View is on. I'll be on Sunday View on Sunday morning. But until then, big shout out to Simon Stewart. Simon's little boy hasn't been well this week, by the way. Simon, I hope he's properly over the bad dose that he had, mate. Simon loves his lad like you've never believed anybody's ever loved their son. Top man. So hope he's well, Simon. And to Aaron for all the work Aaron does. The programme was produced, edited and introduced by myself, Richie Allen. Massive thanks to Scott. And earlier you heard, of course, Dean Henderson, top man as well. Look after yourselves and one another. Have an absolutely marvellous weekend. Do switch off from some of this stuff as well. You know, not to be telling you what to do, but do switch off. I'm going to love you and leave you with Eric Clapton. I'll see you on Sunday morning. Until then, bye for now. It's been a decent week, I think. Bye now.
If I can reach the stars.